You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The following program is a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.
Hi, this is Roy Shoman, and welcome once again to Salvation is from the Jews, the show on Radio Maria that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic faith, or seen the other way around, that celebrates the completion, the fulfillment, the full realization of all of the promise of Judaism in the Catholic Church and the sacraments. Today, once again, we have the great pleasure, I have the great pleasure and honor of having invited on to the show another very grateful, enthusiastic Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church to tell his witness testimony and how he found himself in the Catholic Church, and also, therefore, by implication, the truth and the universal need for the Catholic Church and the sacraments. So without wasting any more time, are you there, Carrie?
I am here.
Well, do you want to just launch into, as we mentioned before, what a nice Jewish boy is doing in a place like this?
Yeah, no, I love hearing it that way. Roy, your colleagues there at the radio station almost gave me a heart attack. They were having some technical difficulties getting you on the air, and they were ready to put me on. But I think I could still tell my story, but please guide me and make sure that I am making sense. This is not something that I've... You know, I have given my testimony before, but not used to being on the radio, especially talking, to a telephone. You know, from my perspective, I think a great place to start is really how I was raised. You know, one of the things that obviously us Jews have in common is our common religion, but it's also our common culture as well. You know, I see Judaism, I think most of us Jews see it that way too. It's not just a culture. I mean, it's not just a religion, but it is our culture. And almost sometimes it seems more so it's our culture. It's who we are more than it is our religion. And sometimes that's a problem. You know, I was with my family today for an event for my great uncle. He was a World War II vet, and they were honoring him. And, you know, I said I had to leave early because I was going to be interviewed on the radio. And my mother's reaction was, and I was honest with what I was doing, and my mother's reaction was, "Don't say your name," you know? So, which is so typical, you know? Don't say your name, because they don't want the world to know. They don't want people to know that I am a Jew who has been baptized into the Catholic faith. And it's so typical of our upbringing. And I think I said this to you, Roy, the other day, that the way I view it is, well, the way a lot of Jewish, family members and people that we know would view it is that it's like we're traitors, you know, we have gone astray but the way I look at it is no, it's not that, you know, it's not like we've gotten traded from the Yankees to the Mets, or the Yankees to the Red Sox. You know, we have basically gone from the minor leagues to the major leagues, and that's just not the way it's viewed in the Jewish faith for some reason. You know, whether it's go ahead.
Well, let me talk a little about. I know that you read my book Salvation is from the Jews. You were actually probably the first Jewish reader of it when it was still in manuscript.
Yep.
But I talk about in there how, you know, God separated out the Jewish people 4,000 years ago from everybody else on the face of the earth, and they had to stay separate for 2,000 years to prepare for the coming of the Messiah. They couldn't afford to intermarry with the pagans and disappear into the general mass of humanity. They had to stay separate, or else the Messiah couldn't come through them. The Blessed Virgin Mary had to be prepared generation after generation. And so I think that God put in the Jewish people this imperative to maintain their Jewish identity, to maintain their separate identity as something which is really needed for those 2,000 years. Unfortunately, it's not needed anymore now that the Messiah has come.
Right, but most of us Jews don't recognize that. And you're right, I absolutely agree. I think it's the way we are raised. I think it's something that is built into, I'd say into our DNA. It's something that God has placed in us that has been able to allow us to maintain our identity, which, you know, how many races can maintain such an identity for these thousands of years? So I absolutely agree with you. And on top of that, we're also a stiff-necked people, right? So, you know, you combine those, you know, God described us that way, and combine that, there is this pressure. You know, I was raised in Brighton Beach, Coney Island area of Brooklyn, New York, It was a 99% Jewish neighborhood. So I didn't even really know from Christians, you know. I didn't know. There was a church in the neighborhood, and my experience in the church was basically they had a fair every year, and all my friends would go to it, and we had very little involvement with the people there other than that, and that was it. Somehow I end up marrying a Catholic girl, and she grew up in my neighborhood. So my mother raises me in a 99% Jewish neighborhood. My wife's parents raise her in a 99% Jewish, a Catholic girl in a 99% Jewish neighborhood. So not surprising that she ends up with a Jewish husband, but a bit surprising to my family that I end up with a Christian wife. But that's kind of where my journey starts. You know, so, and I'll give you an idea of the type of family that I was raised in. And I don't know if I was typical. I know what my friends were like, and I know people on your show that have spoken about having a much more religious background. And, you know, I didn't have a very religious upbringing. We were Jewish and we were proud. And like I said, it was cultural as much as it was a religion. We didn't go to temple every week. We went on the high holy days. You know, Yom Kippur was the big day that our family was there, and some of the other holidays we went to, but that was the big one. And that was really it. You know, my mother kept, this is kind of funny, she kept what I call a pseudo kosher home, right? My grandmother, my mother's mother, came from Eastern Europe. She was from Lithuania, and she was the only grandparent that was not born in the States. The rest were born here in the States, but their parents were from Europe. So there's not many generations that were here. They were a lot more religious, but my family, you know, and typical of so much of us Jews who start to get assimilated, we weren't that religious. My mother kept, when I said a pseudo kosher home, was, you know how us Jews are supposed to maintain separate dishes for meat and dairy. My mother had three sets of dishes. She had her meat dishes, her dairy dishes, and then she had that third set for when we ordered up Chinese food, you know, and when we were eating the things that were non-kosher, of course. Obviously, we're not supposed to eat those things at all, but, you know, that's how I was raised. So I was raised in this home. We were proud to be Jews. It was who we are, not religion. Like, if I asked my wife, you know, what she is, she wouldn't say Catholic first. She would say, well, American, of course, but she would say that she's Italian and Irish, right? Because she's three quarters Italian, a quarter Irish. Well, as Jews, we say we're Jewish, and we're Jewish, right? It's the culture. It's the religion. And that was the type of upbringing that I had. Proud to be Jewish. Not a very religious family, but we identified as being Jews. And here, you know, in my teenage years, I think I kind of ended up, you know, I kind of faded away from God, you know. I blame that on society. I blame it on the school system and my own personal type of person, you know, just the type of person that I am. I am a very scientific minded person. Show me evidence and that's what makes sense to me. And school led me towards being, I called myself an agnostic. You know, I kind of sensed there was some power out there, but I wouldn't really say I was an atheist, but I didn't really believe in God. So after my bar mitzvah was the last really religious thing that I did. And after that kind of faded into life and was worried about going to school. I was worried about meeting girls and doing the things teenagers did. And I didn't really, really focus on God. To me, God didn't seem to be necessary, you know, right? In the society we live in, the way school teaches, the way science is taught to kids in school, God is just not necessary. So my path really begins there, because that was my mentality when I was in my 20s. And the things that kind of led me towards God, because it wasn't, I didn't take a path that went from being a religious Jew to finding Christ. I went from being an agnostic to how to recognize the fact that there is a power out there that exists. That power is the God of the Bible. That God of the Bible did send his son, Jesus Christ, and then the Catholic faith is the true path towards understanding that Catholic faith and what Jesus's role was and is. You know, that's my path.
Let me just I don't know, not exactly summarize, but so at the time that you met and married your Catholic wife, you were essentially agnostic. You had lost your Jewish maybe there was some power out there, but you had no real sense of religion at all.
Yeah, that's accurate. You know, my wife and I talked about how we were going to get married, you know, what kind of ceremony, how we were going to raise our kids. Well, you know, I did feel pressure from the family that I should do it right and there should be a rabbi involved. But I was perfectly fine with having a rabbi and a priest. You know, the church did give me the ability to do that. You know, and raising the kids, religion seemed to be more of a thing that my wife's family was going to put pressure on. You know, in the Jewish faith, there's more push to what is the mother anyway. So I felt comfortable saying, okay, I'm okay with raising my kids Catholic. What was in my mind was I didn't want to raise my kids in a hypocritical way. You know, we knew a lot of people, interfaith marriages, where they try to raise their kids both, and that didn't make sense to me. You know, I wanted to give them the understanding of the Jewish culture and what Judaism was, and that is a path that happens a few years after our marriage that guides me and ends up taking me towards the faith. But at the time of our marriage, my focus was the thought of how we're going to raise our kids in a way that makes sense, where our kids are going to be raised with some level of faith. It was much more important to my wife's family, and I was fine with raising them Catholic. You know, we had a wedding ceremony that was an interfaith marriage done by the rabbi and the priest. Coincidentally, it was the priest that ended up being so wonderful to us and helped me through certain issues with my in-laws at the time, where, you know, they were insisting on a church wedding, and even though the church usually requires that, we were able to get a dispensation to do it outside of the church, and it was the priest that was so helpful to my wife and me. He turns out to be the priest that marries us, baptizes all my kids, and ends up baptizing me.
So what happened? So you're married, you're raising your kids Catholic to satisfy your wife and her family, you're agnostic. Something pretty deep must happen, no?
Well, it doesn't start out as something deep. It really starts out as, okay, now I'm raising my kids Catholic. My wife and I are having some arguments over church attendance. That was the first thing. You know, she insists that we at least go to church on Easter and Christmas. And, you know, I never stopped her from going to church or taking the kids. That wasn't the issue. She wanted me to be there because she wanted to do it as a family. And I said, you know, listen, I go to temple once a year. I feel like a traitor. I feel like, you know, just hypocritical if I go to church twice a year. I'm not Catholic. I'm Jewish. And I told my wife, you pick Easter, Christmas, whichever one you want, I'll go. And that was the initial battle. But then I started feeling, you know what? I also want to raise my kids in a way where they understand the Jewish connection to Christianity. And that's where I started doing some research on my own and reading. And it wasn't from anything else that I know of. I mean, God may have been leading me in a certain way, which is very possible. But at that time, it was more, I didn't want to, you know, my mother was going to put pressure to teach the kids all the Jewish stories and all that history. All I knew at the time was Jesus was Jewish. What does that mean? I had no idea what it meant at the time. Jesus was a Jew. So there must be a way to teach them what does it mean to be a Catholic, but appreciating the Jewish side of Jesus. So I started just doing some reading that led me in that direction, right? And at the same time, as that started attracting me and things were just starting to click that they made a lot of sense to me, I also started going on this own spiritual journey that led me towards all these scientific type books, you know, that had to get me the feel that made me really believe that God has to exist, that the universe just does not make sense without God. And you know, one of the books that led me there, the first ones I remember, books the author called Gerald Schroeder. He's a MIT professor. Do you know the author I'm talking about?
It's a familiar name, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, MIT professor. I think he's in ends up teaching in Jerusalem as well. So it's a Jewish guy, but you know, books that he had, things like Genesis and the Big Bang, where he goes through and shows how using Einstein's theory of relativity and the timeline in the Bible, and shows consistency with the expansion of the universe and a universal clock and so forth. Obviously, you know, I'm not going to get into the complexity of that, and I'm not this you know, I'm a CPA. I'm not, a typical Jewish CPA, not a physicist, but it was those type of books, though, that really helped me, guide me towards the belief in God. So his was more thinking of the universe, thinking of, the different forces in the universe and how there was that everything had to be so finely tuned. And it's the theory today that is towards, it's not creationism, it's intelligent design. And to me, I am definitely a proponent of intelligent design. The universe is intelligently designed, no question about it. And then the biology side of it, you learn about the theory of evolution and, books like Michael Behe's Darwin's Black Box really showed me that even evolution isn't perfect to explain how things develop, because it doesn't explain the beginning of the first cell. It doesn't describe explain the complexity of the initial cell. And just all these things started to come together to me to make more sense that there just had to be this power that started the universe and has to be this power that's outside of the universe. And that was really my starting point, that guided me towards the belief in God. And it was this was all happening concurrently with my trying to figure out how am I going to raise my kids. And at this point now my wife and I have kids, and I'm thinking, how do I raise them in a way that shows the Jewish appreciation in a Catholic way, so that my kids aren't being confused, and they're still being raised Catholic. I'm not going to get my in-laws annoyed. My mother's going to be happy because they're at least going to be able to go to Passover at our house and celebrate and appreciate it. We could have they could sit through a Passover Seder and really appreciate it and understand it. And there's no hypocrisy there. And so those things are happening concurrently. And as I'm doing all this reading, and I'm telling you, I've read so many books on the science side of it, and then on the religious side of it, that I was I just really had this mass amount of knowledge that I was walking with, and I started becoming outspoken about it as well. I would talk about these things because I was challenging myself, and I would do it in front of the family. I would do it in front of my in-laws. I remember when my wife's grandmother passed away, and this was a woman I was very close with. My wife and I know each other a real, real long time. We were teenagers when we started dating. And when she passed away, we were at the wake, and the priest had come in to do some final blessings the last night of the wake before the funeral. And he asked a question about some of the aspects of what the funeral was going to be like the following day. And he asked, does anybody know why I'm going to do this? And he started talking about putting, the white blanket over the coffin and with the incense and so forth. And I swear, my wife's entire family, immediate family, all turned around when the priest asked the question and looked at me because they expected me to give the answer. This was well before I was baptized, but it was where I was at the time, because I did have this knowledge base, but I was still confused. I still didn't know where I was heading. And, but then that leads into a couple of critical events in my life that put me over that edge, that make me realize that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. And there were some books that gave me some very, very clear indication of it. Things were making so much more sense from a Catholic perspective when I started reading, books like, Scott Hahn has some wonderful books out there. I think it's The Last Supper, which shows the connection between the Passover and the Passion of Christ. And my gosh, I'm reading this saying, I can't believe this. It just makes so much sense. When God talks to us Jews and says we're going to be a light to the Gentiles, it makes no sense without Christ. It just doesn't. And all of a sudden, these things were making sense to me in a way that made me say it has to be real. So, I was convinced that, the church teaches us faith and that you need faith to be able to believe. And I say, from somebody like me, it's not true. I didn't need the faith first. I was able to believe first because there is evidence out there and it all made sense to me. But, this was all coming together in a bit of a jumble to me. And then one of the key events, Roy, happens to be the night I met you. I don't know how much you recall of this night, but this, out of everything that I'm going to say, during this interview. This is the one thing that is so critical, and it is a mitzvah, a good deed given to me, a blessing, just this massive blessing that was given to me by God. And so here I am during this journey, somewhere in the middle of it. Things are making sense to me. I'm starting to believe, that God, there's got to be a God. Jesus, I'm not sure where I am as far as Jesus at this time. But a friend of ours, Mike Forrest, a good friend of yours and mine, who's been, he's one of my best friends, one of my closest friends, and had been a spiritual guide to me, and he and I would speak hours through the night talking about religious subjects, and he helped keep me curious about a lot of these things, and definitely helped guide me through some times. He lives in Massachusetts, I live in New York, and he calls me up one day, it's during the week, and he says, listen, we have this guy that's coming to this church in Connecticut, his name is Brendan Walsh, he's a charismatic, which I didn't know from, he has this ability to bring on the Holy Spirit, and my attitude is, yeah, right, come on, this is evangelical stuff from television that people are going to be speaking in different tongues and this nonsense. Yeah, right. He says, do me a favor. Just keep an open mind. Pray about it. And I was even at a time in my life where I struggled to pray because I didn't know whether there was any entity listening to me or not. And he says, just come. Come with an open mind, open heart, and just witness it. And somehow he convinces me to go. It's a work day. I have to get to Connecticut. So I live out on Long Island. I drive my car to a convenient spot where I could take the Long Island Railroad to a certain place, jump in my car, and it's going to be as quick as possible to get there in the evening. He's coming from Massachusetts. Everything was going against me to get there, and this is going back well over 10 years ago. It is so stressful getting there. I get lost. I can't get in touch with him. Cell phones weren't what they what they're like now, now I look back and I feel like there was some power trying to prevent me from getting there, like it was such a critical moment in my life. Eventually I make it there, and I walk into this room. It's in like a rec room of a church, and there's this guy up in the front. There's people lined up, in a row in front of him, and he's going from one to one. He puts his hands on their shoulders or on their heads, and he seems to be in a trance, and he's speaking. I can't understand a word he's saying because it's foreign languages or it's gibberish to me. I have no idea. And he puts his arms on people's shoulders, and as I'm watching him one by one, some people end up falling down and on the floor, and like I think I'm on television in some evangelical thing, and I have no idea what's going on, but I swore to Mike that I was going to keep an open mind to this. I was told, just go up there with everybody else, keep your arms folded, keep your head down, and so forth. So I go up, trying to keep an open mind to this, and he comes over to me. His hands are on my shoulders. My eyes are closed. Next thing I know, I open my eyes. I am lying on the floor looking straight up at the ceiling. And in my head, all I'm thinking is, what the heck just happened? No idea, Two things happen after that make me realize that I had just witnessed a spiritual event, and I've been given a blessing. The first is small, which had to do with you, and the second was the bigger thing. So the first one is, at the end of the event, this Jewish-looking, heavy-bearded guy comes over to me. His name happens to be Roy Shomer.
Let me just say, you mean I had a heavy beard, not that I'm a heavy guy with a beard.
Correct. Sorry if that didn't come out clear. Yes, a bushy beard on your face. You could have been a rabbi if you were dressed differently. And you came over to me. You and I have never met before. As far as I know, I was never spoken about to you. You come over and you look at me and you say, you introduce yourself and you say, are you Jewish? And I said, yes. Now, do I look like a typical Jew? I don't know. People have said I look Italian. I do have a Jewish nose, without a doubt. And you said, yes. When you asked me that question, I was a bit taken aback by it, but yes, I am Jewish. How did you know? And you said that you had been going to a number of these events of Brendan's, and that when he's speaking in tongues, you have only witnessed that he has spoken in Hebrew when he is in a trance twice, and the last time had been with you. And all of a sudden, he's speaking Hebrew. Now, I don't know from Brendan Walsh. He doesn't know from me. Here's this charismatic that apparently has this power to bring on the Holy Spirit. He's talking in these tongues, and apparently, when he's with me, he's speaking in Hebrew. You know, it seemed beyond my understanding of how that is even possible. You know, I don't even think he looked me in the eye to be able to say, hey, this guy has a Jewish nose. I'm going to talk in Hebrew.
He doesn't know any Hebrew. Because I asked him, because he did the same thing to me. You know, in other words, the first time he prayed over me, I heard all this Hebrew coming out of his mouth. And when I told him afterwards, he was amazed, and he doesn't know a word of
it. It blew my mind. But, you know, so that was the first thing that made me say, okay, this seems like something real happened. But the more important thing is how I felt. I have never had in my life such a sense of peace. Now, remember, I was so stressed. I was stressed getting there. It was very intense. I have two young kids at home. Life is tense, you know, work every day. And here I am feeling this sense of peace that I cannot describe. I can't. To this day, I cannot describe it unless you have had the ability to have such a situation given to you, such a blessing given to you to describe the peace that I had. And this peace lasted, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 days, that nothing bothered me. You know, I got home that night, the kids screaming, crying, whatever's going on with my wife, whatever's going on with work, nothing was going to bother me. I just had this sense of peace in my body, in my soul, that I've never been able to match before in my life. And it was that sense of peace that got me to the point where I said, this just has to be true. I've witnessed it now. God has given me this blessing to witness it. And it was that moment that really pushed me over the edge that said, I believe in God. I believe in the God of the Bible. You know, everything was making sense to me that Jesus was this Jewish Messiah, which this may not pinpoint to Jesus being the Messiah. You know, this points to God, and it points to the Holy Spirit. But the pieces were coming together, and I walked through. There was more of an intellectual side to the Jesus part. But that was really what made me truly, truly believe that God exists and God is active in our lives. You know, that was the moment. And it wasn't long after that where I realized, which I'll explain why, that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, which then is another story, because it then took me about a year to get the guts up to be baptized. I'll tell you, it's funny, we were talking earlier on about how being Jewish as a culture and so forth, but being Catholic, and why it took me a year is I didn't know how my family was going to react. Now, it shouldn't have been a surprise to them, because I had been relatively outspoken over the course of, I'd say it was probably three, four years that I had been doing all this reading and trying to find my way. It started with trying to raise my kids a certain way, but led me towards this belief. And I'd speak about it because I had doubts in my mind, and I wanted to challenge people. You know, what do you think about this? And the typical reaction I got from Jews, you know, my stepfather is a person who is one you could talk to about these things, but he is so stubborn. He, you know, when God says we're a stiff-necked people, my stepfather could be the picture, in some Jewish encyclopedia for what it means to be stiff-necked. But still, I would challenge him. And he'd be one of these people that I'd have these battles with. So I was outspoken about it. One of the things that comes to my mind is, a book I read on the Shroud of Turin, that the guy was doing all this research on the Shroud. And I remember there was a rabbi involved, because he was doing research on a lot of Jewish customs that took place during the first century. And the rabbi asks this guy, who was Christian, probably Catholic, I don't remember, why do you study this piece of cloth? And his answer to the rabbi was, well, I study this piece of cloth because it brings me closer to God. And the rabbi's response was, if that cloth brings you closer to God, then you study that cloth. And to me, whatever brings you closer to God, you have to follow that. And for a Jew, it's weird because you could be an atheist as a Jew and you're still recognized as a Jew. You get baptized as a Jew and you're this traitor. You're not considered Jewish anymore in many Jews' eyes. And it's sad. You know, it's sad because I am more proud of my Judaism now than I ever was. And I feel more Jewish now than I ever felt in my life. I mean, I always felt Jewish culturally. But now I feel like I am where I'm supposed to be religiously, for the most part. I mean, like everybody else, I would think I'm not perfect. I definitely am not a saint. And I have corrections I need to make in my life to get me closer to God. But I am so, where I am now is because of the path I took and because of finding Jesus Christ, which is a path I would have never found, you know, if it weren't for these things that have happened in my life. And if, you know, I don't know what it would have been had I met a Jewish girl and raised my kids in a typical Jewish family. I probably would have remained, you know, a cultural Jew that went to temple once a year. And I wouldn't have had those things, I guess. I don't know. You know, the God kind of has a plan for people, and I took the path that I took. I don't know. Yeah, so I think the next stage now is, so how do I find Jesus in all this? And, you know, I this came from a lot of reading as well, the things that just made sense to me. And you know, the perfect example is the link between the Passover and the Passion of Christ. You know, when I started reading this, and it gave me such an understanding of what the Passover was and what it meant, you know, regarding the Last Supper, what it meant when Jesus is up on the cross. And I think, you know, I highly recommend Scott Hahn's book, which I'm pretty sure is the Last Supper that goes into the detail of this. But some of the critical things that just made so much sense to me is, you know, the connection between, you know, there are certain biblical holidays that are ordained for the Jews within the Bible. And, you know, a certain group of them happen during the spring, and a certain group of them happen during the fall. I've read a couple of books which I'm not going to mention because I can't remember the names of them. And although they really had such a great grasp, they weren't the greatest written books, but there's something out there. I would love for one of your listeners to call up and say, hey, this is the book you need to read, that took those holidays, both the spring and the fall holidays, and linked them to both the first coming of Christ and, you know, the likelihood of what's going to happen during the second coming. Because I'm absolutely convinced that when Jesus does return, that critical events are going to happen during these fall Jewish holidays, which you could see how, you know, if you know what those fall Jewish holidays are about, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, what they mean, if you kind of try to picture what they're going to mean towards that point in human history, they're just amazing as well. But in studying the spring holidays, what happens during Passover and what the Passover means, and how that is, you know, prefigures what's going to happen with Christ during that time and Christ up on the cross, it made so much sense to me. And I'll give you some of the basics, but again, it's Scott Hahn's book that I think does such wonders in helping people understand it. But, you know, the story of Moses and during that final plague when the angel of death is sent down to slay all the firstborn, you know, the Jews are instructed, the Hebrews are instructed to sacrifice this lamb, and there are very specific things about this lamb that have to occur, which, again, they'll point to Jesus, and we would need a lot longer than your hour show to go through all the specifics, so I'm going to skip over a lot. But, you know, you have to take the blood and smear it on the doorpost from this lamb. And, you know, when I ask Jews about what that, you know, why we have to put that blood on the door, you know, the basic answer you get is that blood is supposed to show God that you recognize his power and that you believe in God and you're going to be saved from that belief. And it never really made sense to me because, hey, God could see within all of our hearts. I need to show him through the smearing of blood. And as I read more about, you know, Jesus' crucifixion and understanding that in more detail, you start to recognize the fact that, it really is that blood, the lamb is a substitute, right? That lamb becomes the substitute for the firstborn in that household. And that only made sense to me through Jesus up on the cross as well. And another thing is, you know, Jesus's last words, or one of, he says a few things when he's up on the cross, but one of the things that he says when he's up on the cross is, "It is done. It is done." And that always bothered me as to what Jesus could possibly mean when he says, "It is done." Because he's obviously not done with what he even has to accomplish during that first coming, because he still is going to go down to hell. He's still going to rise in 3 days. He's going to still spend time with the apostles. He's going to he's going to ascend into heaven and so forth. So obviously "it is done" not mean his role that he had to play during that time. So what does he mean by "it is done"? And, you know, when you understand, when you sit through a Passover Seder, and I recommend this to all of those listeners out there that have never had a chance to witness this, that may not have Jewish friends, is witness a Passover Seder, a real authentic Jewish Seder. And understand the Christian connection to it. It's just remarkable. But, you know, there are a number of cups of wine that are drunk during the Passover Seder. And, you know, Scott Hahn does a great job of doing this as well, of showing this, how during the Seder never really ends, on Holy Thursday. That last cup of wine is not drunk, that signifies the end of the Passover. And now Jesus is up on the cross, and when he thirsts, they hand him up that hyssop branch dipped in bitter wine, and he brings it to his lips. It's at that time where he says, "It is done." And what he's talking about, when he's saying "it is done," it is the completion of that Passover, right? And, you know, he has that. The Passover has now been finished. It is the only thing that makes sense when he says "it is done," what he is talking about. And it there are so many things like this that as I've studied the Bible and as I've read interpretations and different discussions on different aspects of it, I have come away with so many things that just make me say, "My gosh, it is so remarkable the amount of information that you can learn." The Bible has so much in it. We can only get into bits and pieces of it, but every time I picked up something else that talked about different parts of it, I learned something new that only made sense because it always pointed towards Jesus as this Jewish Messiah. The Passover, to me, is the biggest one because it's obviously such a critical event for Christians in pointing towards the resurrection of Christ, which obviously our faith is built around.
And absolutely, it goes without saying, but the Last Supper was simultaneously a Passover Seder and the first Catholic Mass. It was the point in time where the old sacramental system was transformed into the new sacramental system.
Yeah, absolutely. But to understand that, to really, you know, I think most, you know, I hate to use the term cradle Catholics, but you know, so many Catholics don't recognize that link because they're not taught to. You know, I mean, the Church does have this. I mean, you read the Catechism, and there are things that do talk about this connection. So the information's out there, but it's not something that is so specifically taught to really explain the link between the Jewish Passover and the Passion of Christ.
I think we're in a very particular time. You mentioned Scott Hahn. Scott Hahn's done a lot in order to illumine the Jewish-Catholic connection, you know, the way Catholicism is the continuation of Judaism after the coming of the Messiah. This is pretty unprecedented. We have there's a recent book, The Jewish Roots of the Eucharist, by I think his name is Brand Petrie, which is very good around this. I think that this opening the eyes, this kind of awakening in the Catholic world to the Jewish roots of Catholicism is something that's kind of new. I mean, it's not original, it's not unheard of, but it's a new wave that's come onto the Catholic Church. And I think it may actually be a sign of the times, that it's the time for the entry of a lot of Jews into the Church, the reconciliation of the Jewish world and the Catholic world, so to speak, and the entry of Jews into the Church. a little bit of a hobby horse.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Roy. And I think, you know, there are going to be a lot of road bumps along the way. One of the things that I've learned over these years is that, you know, when you believe in God, with that belief in God is also the belief in the devil as well. And, you know, to me, the devil is so subtle in his attacks. But where is he going to attack? And you see it throughout history. You know, the Catholic Church is attacked, and Jews are attacked. You know, the Jews still have some role to play. And I'm not going to sit here talking to you about it because you're the scholar on this, you know, and showing the Jews' role throughout history. But you still see it today. You know that, and as people, you know, like us, try to be outspoken. And we're not trying to change the Catholic faith. You know, we're maybe helping to pinpoint, you know, how it developed through Judaism, and the important role of getting Jews into the church. But there are people out there that we witness that are so against it. You know, that as if we're trying to change the church. I haven't witnessed any Jewish. Any baptized Jew, I hate using the word convert because I don't see myself as a convert. I see myself as a completed Jew, maybe. I don't know. That there are people that are trying to attack the church through anything Jewish. You know, history has shown that as well. So I agree with you, but I think it's a dangerous time as well. And there will continue to be people out there that sound so intelligent and so pro-church that will try to point that you can't even mention Jews when it comes to the church, which is just so wrong. I don't know if I'm really putting my thoughts together clearly on that. But
no, I think you're making a lot of sense, and I think it's because the conversion of the Jews is so important to God, and we know that there has to be a widespread conversion of the Jews before the second coming can happen. That paragraph 674 of the New Catechism says the glorious Messiah is coming. Is suspended at every moment of history until his recognition by all Israel. We know that the devil wants to stop the second coming. He certainly wants his, you know, time of being the prince of this world to be extended as much as possible. So the devil's going to pull out all the stops to keep the Jews from entering the church. And so I do think that the two go together, that, you know, that this is a very special movement of the Holy Spirit. And, of course, it comes with some very intense enemy activity. Let me ask you, though, because we're not going to have, unfortunately, all that much longer. The hour is, you know, coming into the last lap.
Yeah.
You talked about the peace that you had at that when Brendan Walsh, when you went out in the spirit of the Brendan Walsh healing service. But I want to ask you about the sacraments. I mean, what happened when you were baptized? What happened when you received communion? What's your experience of confession?
Yep.
Do you have any echoes of that kind of supernatural peace coming through the sacraments of the Catholic Church now?
Yeah, a bit funny is my first time. So, you know, the priest that married my wife and me and had baptized my kids. Now all of a sudden I'm about to enter the church, and so I had private study with him. He and I had had a number of points of dialogue during this time, and he had been a spiritual guide for me. So I didn't have to go through the typical adult education that most people about to be entered into the faith have to go through. So I had private study, read the catechism, and so then it comes to my day that chosen to be baptized. So it wasn't around the same time of year, you know, during Easter that most others would enter the faith. And I'm getting really nervous about this and, trying to figure out, my gosh, you know, one of the things he didn't clarify to me is, don't I have to go to confession? Because I remember my kids having to go to confession before they receive First Communion. How is this going to work? And, you know, I'm going to have, you know, these few guests there, and then I'm going to be baptized, and he's going to pull me into some private room, and I'm going to be there an hour and have to go through all these things I've gone through my 30-some-odd years of life at that time, you know. Excuse me. So it started stressing me. And I realized, you know, as I asked the question, I realized that my baptism was going to take care of that for me, and I would basically be given a new slate, so a bit of a blessing that comes to us adults that get baptized. But, you know, to me, my whole journey that I led you to in getting to be comfortable that there was a God, the God of the Bible, and then the hump that got me to accept Jesus as the Messiah, I then had that final step to be able to say, what about the Catholic faith? You know, why not one of the Protestant faiths? And, I did have experience with Catholicism because I had been going to church with my wife, even though it was once a year, I was going. And there was the one thing that always I found remarkable when I was in church is I kind of felt at home, because it seemed so Jewish to me. You know, the walking, everything they did almost mirrored things that were done in temple. You know, you walk with the way the tabernacle is kept, and you know, for all these non-Jewish listeners, you know, that tabernacle has the Word of God kept in it. You know, the scrolls of the Torah are kept in that, and it's open, and it's marched around the church just like the crucifix is marched down the aisle of the church. And as in church, it just made, I always felt, wow, this just does seem so Jewish. And I did have experience where I've been to Protestant churches for, whether it was for funerals or different type of events, I had been there. And, you know, so I always felt at home there. But my reading really directed me towards the belief in a certain hierarchical structure that it was so Jewish to have it guided by the elders, by you know, at some point there was this structure that also seemed to make sense. But Catholicism to me, and when I say Catholicism, you know, I understand the Eastern European, I mean the Eastern Orthodox and some of the other bits that, of churches, the Armenian Church and so forth, and that have broken away from the Church. And I do still feel that we are all one, even though there's, you know, the loss of the belief in certain things, especially in the Pope. But was so convinced of the understanding of this hierarchical structure, you know, and to me, the reading of the Bible is pretty clear in what Jesus says when, both at the Last Supper, when he says, this is my body, this is my blood, but also when he hands over, you know, the keys to Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. You know, I've gone to a number of different, debates nothing, the Protestant side just never made sense to me from any of these debates, whether it was praying to the dead or the role of Mary. The role of Mary is so Jewish. You know, I mean, the Ark of the Covenant versus Mary, it's all there. Of course, the great joke that I remember is, you know, the difference between the Italian mother and the Jewish mother. When the kid does something wrong, the Italian mother says, I'm going to kill you, and the Jewish mother says, oh, yeah, I'm going to kill myself. But the joke about how do they know Jesus was a Jew? Well, he lived at home until he was 30. He went into his father's business, and his mother thought he was God. But the way Jesus venerated his mother himself, the thought of the fact that this woman, even before I even understood the way she gave herself to God and said that, you know, as your will, you know, was the fact that she carried Jesus in her womb. To think that there's not something special about her just didn't make sense to me. But so everything that the Catholic faith believed seemed to be an instinct within me that it just made sense. Everything. You know, for whether it was Mary, whether it was the even going to the sacraments as well. So that kind of guides my feelings. So I did look for a spiritual impact on the day that I was baptized, received communion and was confirmed. But I have to admit that there was nothing close to the peace that I felt of the blessing I had been given through that event that Brendan Walsh did. I did not expect one. I did recognize that I had been given this blessing, that most people will not get. So I did not expect anything. I did have my radar up a bit, wondering if I was going to sense anything. I do not doubt what occurred that day in receiving the sacrament. I have had events in my life. There was a time, where there was just something I felt extreme guilt over, something that I was that was a temptation that was very dramatic for me. I somehow held myself off from bringing to a point which would have even been a much greater sin. But when this event occurred and I felt this extreme amount of guilt, I went immediately to confession. And I, when the priest offered absolution, I prayed, was down on my knees, and I felt this relief, tears pouring from my eyes, that I know that at that moment that God had forgiven me. There was no question about it. So I've had events like that have been attached to the sacraments that have made me feel the sacraments are what they are. You know, I recognize that going to church every week, receiving communion, is the most important thing that a Catholic needs to do. I feel it. But as far as whether I got the benefit of that blessing that God had given me, now that hasn't recurred. Sad to say, but I don't need it. You know, I wish it upon somebody who does.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left. Is there anything that you want to say, perhaps to encourage our Cradle Catholic listeners, or any last thoughts you want to leave us with?
Yeah, I mean, nothing more than that I've said already. I do encourage the Cradle Catholics to do some study. Read the book. Scott Hahn is great, but there are others out there as well that really show the Jewish connection of it, because you really have such a greater grasp of what Catholicism is all about when you understand the Old Testament. You know, this is the old saying that the Old Testament is revealed in the New, and the New Testament is hidden in the Old, and it's so true. And I don't think that the Church in general does a great job of teaching that. You know, I think they're doing a great job now, and the current Pope is phenomenal, as has been the last two, in trying to help develop better relations with the Jews. But as far as teaching the what it means to have been a Jew during Jesus' time, how the Jewish holidays link to the Passion of Christ, what it may mean during the end times and so forth, I encourage the study of that. I think it brings you closer to your faith. I think it brings you closer to God, and it gives you a much greater understanding of how God is currently operating in human history. And of course, I encourage the reading of Salvation is from the Jews, because that book was, I haven't mentioned it during this time, but that book was a critical part of my journey as well in understanding who I am. Because for Jews, it's tough, because you got to get over that hump of, I'm a Jew. You know, so many people will say the Catholic faith could be true and it could be the way to go, or Christianity could be the way to go, but us Jews still have our own separate role, and God gave us this role, and we have to take our path and do what we have to do, and you're missing out. That's not God's path. And I'm not going to sit here saying that Jews that have not been baptized are doomed to hell. I think that's a sinful way to think. What I'm saying is that God has a role. He expects us all. Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. It is his son. Jesus is through whom we need to get to God, the Father.
And as Rosalind Moss says, entering the Catholic Church is the most Jewish thing that you can do.
I totally agree. I totally feel that way.
So I'm going to have to draw to a close now. Thank you very much, Gary, for giving your witness testimony and sharing your enthusiasm with us. If anyone wants to listen to the show again or share it with someone else, they're archived on the Radio Maria website, radiomaria.us, and also on my website, salvationisfromthejews.com. As Carrie said, learning about the Jewish roots of the Catholic faith can be very edifying and enriching for Cradle Catholics. One way you can do it is by listening to this show, which is on every week at this time on Radio Maria. So with that, let me say thank you for listening, and hope you join us again next week on Salvation is from the Jews. Bye for now.
You are listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The program you just heard was a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.